Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, welcome everyone to The Distraction. The Distraction Reviews. It's Tuesday. We're reviewing our latest cinematic masterpiece, a major Japanese wrestling event. Everyone, that's what we're here to talk about, starring who is in this thing? Kota Ibushi, Jay White, Kazuchika Okada, who else? Tomohiro Ishii, he was there. He made a brief cameo.
Shingo Takagi.
Yeah, Shingo Takagi was there. I'm Jeremy Lambert, joined as always by the Chubby Chief, Joseph Holbert. Joseph, how are you?
I'm about 25 minutes away from sleep. I'm very concerned right now. I'm hoping I'm going to be carried by our guest today, one of the greats in the game. I need him to carry us today. I mean, Jeremy does too. But we're here to talk about definitely something that was a film. That's what we're here to do today, yes.
Also joining us, making his distraction debut, I was joking with him off air, the way you get on this show is you just get fired from Fightful, or you just leave. Carlos left. He didn't actually get fired. You just leave Fightful, and then I'll have you on. If you work with me, I hold you down and don't let you on the show. Carlos Toro's here. Carlos, how you doing, buddy?
I'm so thankful to finally be here on the show. The second, I think I'm the second Fightful alum to be on the distraction, but I did beat Andrew Thompson as far as getting here quicker than any other Fightful alum since his departure. So I do feel like I maybe needs like a little King of Pro Wrestling type of trophy just for that accomplishment alone.
We can do that. We can make some type of trophy. I'm not doing it, but Jimmy Van's got money. Maybe he'll make a trophy.
I mean, in truth, Jeremy, you know, Carlos, he's a legend. And he's my mentor and trainer in many ways, because my Fightful podcast debut was under the leadership of Carlos, right? We did some boxing stuff, right? Which feels like at least 5 decades ago, but we did do it. I'm convinced of it. There's evidence out there somewhere. We definitely did this. So that's really, he broke me in, brother. You know, I owe him everything. This is my career now. So this is going to be fun. He is going to carry us and talk about Japanese filmmaking.
Now, a major Japanese wrestling event, Joseph, that's what we're here to talk about.
Okay.
Yeah, we got to introduce this, like, and it's funny because I immediately thought about this when I was reading the video description of this. It's a major Japanese wrestling event starring Kota Ibushi, Jay White, Kazuchika Okada, and more. Like, this is the Star Wars holiday special where, like, see all the characters and with their actual... their actual, like, real life names, and just very,
to be
very
clear,
different.
Let's set the table immediately here. This is definitely better than the Star Wars Holiday Special. Okay. everyone can relax for that. I'm going to set my story here, okay? Before you get mad at me, block me on Twitter or send abuse my way. I came into this event with a clean slate, okay? I found out the card on, like, Sunday.
Yeah.
I have no investment. I purely am talking here just from what I watched. There are going to be things that you love that I liked because I didn't have that investment. Carlos is going to help us in that regard. However, I think we can all agree up front here, this was a really great pair of events, right? We could say that much at least.
Yes. Guys, send in your super chats. Get your question, comment, statement read on air. We are talking New Japan Wrestle Kingdom 15. We titled it this way because we got dinged on Fightful Scraps. I guess they didn't like that. They thought we had some footage on there. Sean was like, don't put it in the title. I said, okay, I'm going to call it a major Japanese wrestling event. And so that's the bit, everybody. I think everybody caught on. Anakin JMT says, here's $5 for the next 5 years. Carlos has to has left to write Karrion Kross article. Carlos, Karrion Kross is back in the ring tomorrow night. You're coming back to write this article, right? When he beats Damian Priest?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I say I left Fightful, I meant conditionally.
Yeah, you've got to do the Karrion Kross articles, man. When he wins that title back, you're back. You're back in the fold. Evan Wright says, Moonsault Power Slam. That's all I've got to say. We will talk about that match and that spot. JJ says, I've rebranded even more with the name change. My God, Distraction number one fan, JJ. Here to support the stars. New Japan event was great. Ibushi is my spirit animal. Keep smiling, grinning. JJ, I hope you are doing well, buddy. We always appreciate your support. Let's get into this event. We're not going match by match. We're going to kind of go night and be all over the place. Night one, let's just start at the top. Double gold, IWGP heavyweight, and Intercontinental Championship. Kota Ibushi dethrones Tetsuya Naito. As spoiled by Fire Pro Wrestling when Kota Ibushi won the match. I sat on the Fire Pro Wrestling stream. I said, like, Kota Ibushi's like top five for me to watch, to just care about. I love Kota Ibushi. This match, they tried to kill each other, as you would expect from these two men. I really love this match. How about you, Carlos?
I really loved it. I mean, you look at the history of Kota Ibushi and Tetsuya Naito. I mean, these guys, yes. They're always trying. Their goal is almost like, you know, give the best match possible, and then secondary objective, try to kill each other, if that makes any sense. Overall, I thought that this was a maybe one of the best matches, which is really saying something. And, you know, from the very beginning, even before you get into before Wrestle Kingdom, you almost got a sense that the next 6 months, maybe the next 8 months or even 12 months was going to be Kota Ibushi's time. Because, I mean, just to kind of give a bit of a background to anyone that wasn't aware. So Ibushi, ever since the pandemic, has been kind of on this quest to, quote unquote, become God and like reach a new level as a wrestler and as a person. And the only way to do so is to become double champion and enact the changes that he wanted to bring and have the belts as a sort of a vehicle to carry out his message. And even after he lost the briefcase to Jay White a few months ago, which I was very, very surprised, but I guess you got to find a way to somehow justify two major main events on both nights. You did get the sense that this was finally going to be the time to where they really pulled the trigger on Kota Ibushi, because they've kind of teased it a little bit. There's been times where New Japan has almost kind of pulled the trigger, but haven't quite really. But now, especially in this time where, I mean, Naito, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Okada, they've all had their time, and some of them are kind of getting up there in age and entering the twilight years of their career. You need a guy like Kota Ibushi to kind of carry the company. And I mean, this was about as good a match as you can possibly ask for between these two at the Tokyo Dome. Even if it was only night one, this felt like a real definitive conclusion to Wrestle Kingdom.
It's Joseph. Interesting, right? Because it definitely worked within the template of like what we've come to expect as an IWGP heavyweight title match, right? Like in terms of length, and I think in terms of structure mostly. But it was like them two trying to work their match within that template. And I actually think it worked pretty well. They kind of spread the insanity around, I thought, pretty nicely. And while the length, you know, if you're watching this without watching the show, the length may be a bit daunting. I think if you can watch it with an open mind, it went really smoothly, right, this particular match. And I think that's a credit to the pacing here and the way that they approached it. Sometimes Naito in longer matches, I find it can be kind of like a hindrance to him. You know, like he uses it as like a crutch almost, right? Like, we'll get there in the end kind of thing. Ibushi, he's not really that guy. He doesn't really let that happen. And that's, you know, you get like 10 minutes in the match and there's already some insanity going on. There's some chaos. And then it was sort of kind of, it was a roller coaster. It wasn't, you know, a Wrestle Kingdom main event that I'll say, like, I'm going to rewatch it all the time. But it was a great match. And the big thing, the disclaimer to put over this, as someone that hasn't watched like a ton of the post, not post pandemic, but since coming back from, you know, restart and such, is like, it is different with the crowd as they are now. Right, like the atmosphere does change it, you know, not having that roar and instead having the applause, it kind of disconnects stuff from how they usually would do it. And I think at times that's been a hole in the way they approach it. With these two, are too good for that, and they have great chemistry, so it delivered for me. I thought it was a tremendous main event. And I think the big point, which Carlos hit on perfectly there at the end, at its conclusion, it felt like that was the end of Wrestle Kingdom. Now, granted, it wasn't, we had another 4 hours, but. That's a credit to what they did there. That it wasn't like, okay, that's part one. It was like, wow, you know, exhale. So that says a lot, I think.
I mean, Ibushi was taking a German suplex on the floor onto his head and neck like 5 minutes into this match. That pretty much set the tone for the entire match right there. The Hurricane Rana spot off of the apron. These two men are nuts. They don't care, and bless them for it. At this point, like, it used to be a thing where I would be worried, like, okay, you got to stop taking these bumps. Now, they ain't going to listen to us anyway. So if they're going to do it, they're going to keep wrestling, whatever. Just be safe out there, guys. And I mean, like, they went through it. You mentioned match length. It went 31 minutes. It really didn't feel like it. I mean, the Okada match went longer. Dude, the Rambo went 35 minutes, and that felt every bit of 35 minutes. Like, this match, yeah, this match was 31 minutes, and I thought it flew by. I was like, this is good. I'm for this. And then when we get to the night two main event, which I think we're just going to jump to right now, like, that went 48 minutes, and, like, it felt every bit of 48 minutes by the end of it. And I like Jay White. I like his heel work. I just mentioned how much I love Kota Ibushi. I don't need these 48 minute epics and matches and stuff. I just don't. Longer does not always equal better in the case of professional wrestling. And I didn't need it, but that's what we got. We did have Kota Ibushi picking up the victory, remaining the double champion, overcoming Jay White. Carlos, what'd you make of this match?
Yeah, and just to kind of go a little bit off your point about the match length, I mean, it went 48 minutes. It was a great 48 minutes, but I can see why people would be a little bit tired, especially me. I was a little tired just, you know, just watching it, coming out of literally three straight matches on that show right before the main event that went at least 21 minutes each. So yeah, it did kind of feel like, you know, and especially with the crowd not being allowed to just kind of audibly cheer and just all you can do is just clap and just stomp your feet, it did kind of feel like it maybe dragged on just a little bit. And I think that's more of a credit, more due to the COVID-19 era of New Japan, where, yeah, there's crowds, but it almost doesn't feel like it. I think there were a couple of matches that were slightly hurt because of the lack of crowds, but crowd noise, I should say. But going back to the actual main event, I thought this was a great match with very small character moments sprinkled throughout the match that I thought were just absolutely excellent. Just the, I don't know how much of the G1 you guys watched, but Kota Ibushi throughout the G1, there were times where he would just enter this just very, very bizarre, stoic, you know, apathetic looking stance, where he just completely no-sells everything. And I think Chris Charlton in this match, like, called it like the devil or the demon was just coming on. And they're just great moments where just he was just completely thrashing Jay White to the point where Jay White, even though it was kind of like an underhanded tactic, he was he basically laid on the mat and was like, dude, just pin me, just stop. And just small moments like that was absolutely excellent. 48 minutes, again, it was very weird seeing a 48-minute match in a New Japan show during the pandemic, because they've made it a point to make these shows much, much shorter than how it was pre-pandemic. Like, every G1 show was, like, done in two and a half hours, and here it's like, you do 48 minutes, and it kind of does drag on a little bit. Like you said, Jeremy, you know, sometimes less is more, and longer does not necessarily equate to better wrestling, but I thought that this was, you could do a far worse 48-minute match between these two, and I thought this was, say, a solid match between the two. I actually kind of preferred the Naito Ibushi match just a little bit more, but I think I love the character moments from Ibushi on the Jay White match a little bit more than the Naito match.
I'm really torn on this match, and I'm torn on Jay White in this spot in general. So first things first, the presentation here, the pre-match I'm talking, Jay White has grown into this role and spotlight better than almost any professional wrestler I can think of off the top of my head. He had charisma 2 years ago. He now feels like one of the biggest stars in pro wrestling. When that guy makes his entrance, he completely owns that setting. So huge thumbs up for immediately getting me 3 hours deep into a show to sit forward and say, this is going to be something serious. This guy means business. Credit to the announce team, who did a great job, I think, on both shows. They really convinced me Jay White had a real chance in this, which I didn't believe going in. I know a lot of New Japan fans did, because, you know, they've got Jay over to that way. I'm looking at it from a cold perspective. So credit in all that regard. Sometimes it feels like Jay White is a wonderful square peg in a very different round hole, because I love what he does in these matches. And I love that he will do the, you know, a traditional sort of structure, and he'll do a heat segment. But it's like, if it's all going to end up being the same at the end, it's difficult. However, this match, I don't think, suffers from that. Because while I agree it could have been trimmed, and, like, that's a lot. After what we had before, as you said, it's a lot. But the final portion of this match, I do think, if nothing else, will be a pivotal moment for Jay's career, as he's clearly in transition as a character now. Right? So, whether we think it's too long or whatever, it's like, some of these matches, they reach their storyline crescendo, or narrative crescendo is a better word, and then it's like, okay, now we do the finishing stretch, right? And it's like, it muddies the waters. I think Jay White being courageous and sort of, not heroic, but sort of admirable at the very end here, will prove important to his character and his story. So for that reason, I kind of accept it. I think the biggest thing this match suffered from was that it was not the main event of a one-night Wrestle Kingdom, but a two-night Wrestle Kingdom. And as we saw that off-air, that changes it very much in terms of how you view it as a fan. I would have loved for them to commit a little bit more on what Jay was doing when he was in control. Like, I loved when he started and was on the head and neck, but then he went to the ribs, which was something he did in a previous match from what Kevin Kelly said. He did some stuff on the leg, and it's like, it lost its way for me in that regard. But I completely agree with what Carlos said about Ibushi's character. I thought it was fabulous. I think they're both great. Two of the best pro wrestlers in the world. It was a great match, objectively speaking. I just need to stress that as someone that wasn't invested going in, yeah, the length probably didn't help me. But I'll say this much. I left this match intrigued by where Jay White was going next. And I think there's something to be said for that, right? And I think it was the right finish too. So great match, even if long and a little daunting.
Well, let's talk about Jay White right fast, because in his backstage promo, he said that he's done with New Japan after New Year Dash, which is in a few hours now. Less than 12 hours is New Year Dash. Is this a work? Is he actually leaving? There seems to be no actual reporting on if his contract is up. He's got people hooked, I would tell you that much. New Year's Dash, the past couple of years, it feels like not a ton has happened. This year, I'm like, I got to see what they're going to do with Jay White, if nothing else. If he's going to be kicked out of Bullet Club, if he is actually leaving. What do you think is going to happen with Jay White, Carlos?
It's It's very intriguing, especially when you look at the history of past Bullet Club leaders on New Year's Dash. I mean, Kenny Omega was ceremoniously kicked out. Same with AJ Styles. They both happened on New Year Dash. And with Jay, he is in a very pivotal moment as a wrestling character. And I don't know if it's an outright him being kicked out of Bullet Club, because for a while I did kind of think that maybe there'd be kind of like a little bit of a civil war between the evil led group of Bullet Club, and then you got the Jay White led group of Bullet Club, and there were a little bit of those seeds planted during the G1, especially with Jay White against Yujiro Takahashi, which was not a wrestling match, but a phenomenal, you know, way to tell a long-term story. It could be that, but I mean, normally when it comes to these types of things where someone is leaving the company, a big star like Jay White, we would kind of have known something. There would be at least a little bit of semblance. And I think the mystery of it all, I think it's very intriguing if it's a work, and I probably think it's going to be a work. I still think I'm very, very intrigued because we don't know what exactly we're going to do. Like, I mean, it's a guy who just outright says, yeah, I'm leaving. You don't really get to hear guys publicly say stuff like that. We hear back behind the scenes, but not necessarily out, you know, in front of a camera right after a big match like that.
It seems pretty likely to me that he's staying in New Japan, right? I think that's, you know, I think the interesting thing is kind of pondering a world in which he moves away from Bullet Club as a babyface. And, you know, babyface in this promotion is sort of the wrong term, but just less of a, like, pure evil villain, right? And I have no problem with that for Jay. I just wonder, like, what is then left for Bullet Club as, like, the centerpiece? Because I look...
Evil, Joseph.
Listen, man. I think they know evil's not that guy. And I think Kenta has a great showing on here, which we'll get to. But, like, he's not that anymore either. It's interesting. I mean, the thing as well with Jay is, like, this is kind of the role he's made for on this roster, right? Like, the absolute top dickhead villain in the crew. It's like, if you then make him just another, like, honorable fighting man, it's like, well, we have a few of those guys at the top. It'll be interesting to unfold. I think... Honestly, the more I think about and talk about it, it's like it's more likely he just becomes even more of a dick as the head of Bullet Club. So we'll see. I'm sure he'll kill it.
I think that's kind of the way to go, because you're right. Like, babyface Jay White, I think he'd be great at it. Like, they've got enough of those kind of like fighting spirit babyface guys. They don't need Jay White to fill that role. They don't, like, evil's not the guy who... I'm not invested in any top heel stable led by Evil. Kenta, I like Kenta. I think he could do it. I mean, he closed Tokyo Dome last year attacking Naito, and it looked like he was going to be in for a big year before everything kind of fell apart. I think Kenta could probably pull that off, but yeah, it's a role that just, it seems made for Jay White, and they've been building kind of more towards an Evil Jay White split than like a Kenta and Jay White split. I do think it'd be better if he just went, like, kick Evil out of the group. I don't know what you're going to do with Evil, but I don't have use for him. I need dickhead Jay White. That's a role he's cast for. So, but I'm way more intrigued in New Year Dash now, because I want to see what happens with this. I want to see where they go with Jay White. I hope it's not a babyface thing. I don't think it will be, but that promo was almost like a babyface promo. Like, he's just like, yeah, why is anybody helping me? Like, I've sacrificed everything for this. I've left my family. Like, I'm just done. Like, it felt very much like a sympathetic babyface promo. And I don't think that's the role you need to go with Jay, unless you're going to go. And this is what I'll kind of transition into. Unless you're going like Will Ospreay as the top kind of dickhead heel, and you're going, and like, that's going to be your sort of top heel guy. And I mean, Ospreay took on Okada. I feel like if you're going with that for Ospreay, probably should have had him beat Okada, so he has, like, you know, a bragging right there. Instead, we had Okada win. The Rainmaker was back. Joseph, your favorite move, the money clip. Use this shit.
Oh, you're a fan of the money clip. Good. Like I am.
Seriously. Good to know. I'm not, like, people hate that move. I'm like, it's fine. I wish you'd like, you know, put a little more emphasis on it. I'm
risk control. Is there risk control with it?
So well, here's the problem. Well, here's the problem with the money clip is that it was something that Okada just kind of put it out of nowhere. It said, hey, G1, I'm going to be focusing a lot on the money clip. And he literally tried to win every single match with the money clip. And I think he's won every match with the money clip. And the problem is that Okada is not necessarily a submission wrestler. So every time he does it, it almost felt like he was just forcing it to work. And I guess to an extension, it kind of got over and he sort of got better at making it seem like a little more seamless. But at the same time, it's still just weird, just kind of just pulling that out of nowhere. It's similar to kind of how I felt like when John Cena was doing the springboard stunner, where it just like, it just didn't look good. It just didn't feel natural. It's like, it just felt weird.
Yes. Well, I thought Ospreay actually did a great job of like selling it as a finish a couple of times in this match. This match is a great match. However, this is number one candidate for what I said earlier about the narrative of this match reached its conclusion when it was like, okay, finally this piece of shit Will Ospreay is going to have to pay for his sins. Okada's got him. Okay, you remember this part of the match? It was like, Okada's finally, let's finish this, Okada. And then they just did like 10 minutes. They just did another 10 minutes where they did moves to each other. And it's like, I can accept it with Jay because I sense you're doing something with him. Ospreay's brand new as a complete dick heel. But he just let him lose that way. Okay, I'm leaving it. Because what happens is that it's like if every guy has these like courageous kind of, and not courageous, maybe is the wrong word, but like these really hard fought wars, it's too kind of earnest and sincere. They had a great match and Okada had him. To me, extending it was unnecessary, but I also have to kind of remind myself, I watch wrestling one way and other people watch it different. Some people needed that for it to be in the New Japan kind of classic form. So if that's the case, you know, I'm sure Okada understands the New Japan audience better than I do. Hot take. And I'll say this much. You could tell, even without the crowd being able to, like, you know, cheer, you could tell they loved this match. There was, like, an energy in the building and a sort of an intrigue that kind of went through even the way they were being able to react to it. So it's a great match. I know that Ospreay is what he is at this point. You know, that's there. But he is a great performer. And I'm not going to pretend otherwise. The heavyweight start, like the first portion of this match where he was like actively adjusting to what his new role is, I think had some kinks. I thought Okada here was like back to being best wrestler on earth, best wrestler of all time levels. Okada, he looked inspired from the start. He has an energy in big matches, right, where it's like he can portray such importance and stature through the smallest stuff. And that's him at his absolute best. And I think he did it a few times here. So another great match. I loved it.
Carlos, any other thoughts on this match?
I mean, overall, I really thought this match was really good. I honestly thought Will should have won it. I mean, you got Empire in their first major Wrestle Kingdom show, and then they all go over. Like, I was fully convinced that after Will lost, I figured, okay, they got to at least make some type of consolation and have one of their guys win. And to be honest, if the problem was that you didn't want to make Okada look bad by losing, you know what they should have done? I think they should have ended the match when Ospreay did that just insane like deadlift, like I guess Falcon Arrow through the announcer for one of the tables just outside of ringside, and you have Will win by count out and just really emphasize that he is the new dickhead heel, because him kind of dragging Okada back in is like the complete opposite of what you would expect out of a dickhead heel. Like dickhead heel would have absolutely loved to have gotten the count out victory instead of just trying to beat Okada, quote unquote, the honorable way by pinning him. And I get, maybe you want to put an emphasis point on beating Okada that way, but I think you could have at least maybe done something where Okada would have been protected if he had been counted out in that way. Because that was a brutal spot outside of ring.
Well, I think they, for that, like you want Ospreay
to, like, his whole goal was to prove he was better than Okada. So if you win that way, you don't fully prove it. That said, like, you're not wrong in that they could have done that and kind of just established a different role for Ospreay going that route of, like, you know what? I worked smarter than you. I had you beat. I didn't need to pin you. Like, you needed to get up like a man and come in and beat me. And then you can do the rematch down the line.
See, here's the, and this is now, this could like branch into a bigger subject, but it's like,
we don't need that right now.
This is where like wrestling narrative in many ways has taken a second, you know, like kind of a backseat to performance. And I'm not saying that's better or worse. But what I'm saying is when you see Okada wrestle someone like in the mid card and he still has a 20-minute match, like that's an example of how the wrestling business has evolved or just straight up changed, whatever one you want to choose. Like, it's now to him and these guys, it's about having the best possible match on this stage. So, like, while my fandom, when I hear Carlos say that, it's like, damn, that's good heat for Will. Like, to them, it would be like, oh, we left a ton on the table, too much on the table. We need to give everyone a chance to have the best possible match. It happens a few times on every show nowadays. It's like, it's just the way it is. So you kind of lose, to me, and sometimes you lose like what's unique about personalities that way, because everyone has to do the same. Like, we have to have a great match tonight, a certified great match. But I'm with you. I think that's, at this point, they're not doing that, right? Like, every match has to have like the emphatic. I mean, I remember when Okada pinned Jericho with like a roll up, and it was like, people shut down the New Japan World. Like, what's going on here? What's going on? We need to hit three finishes, boy. It's like, it's just, it is what it is. So, I don't know. I'm with you.
Imagine if Tanahashi had won with the, what did he win with? The
running small package.
Yeah, the running schoolboy. Yeah. That's what it was. Oh my God.
Yes.
Yeah, and listen, and look, and I'm not usually, and I'm not a fan of like advocating for count on finishes, but New Japan never does that. They never do that. So it would be a refreshing, like, it would be a change of pace where it doesn't feel like horrible because you didn't do 20 of those same finishes / DQ finishes like right before this match. But again, I'm okay with this match. I'm okay with the way it ended. And I've always been an advocate, especially in New Japan. One loss on a big show does not mean you get your buried or anything. I still fully expect Will to have a huge, huge 2021. I actually honestly think that he's going to win either a major title or he's going to win a major tournament, one or the other.
It's a big part of the way they book their like roster is status quo and like earning your major moment is a big thing to the way they do things still. And it's still traditional in that sense, right? Like, I remember when Jay came in, what were we talking about, 2-3 years ago now, and he wrestled Tanahashi. And Tanahashi just won, right? Yeah. And he does it here on this, we'll get to that in a second, but like, there is something to be said for like, yeah, we're pushing this guy, but it's that kind of sports influence, I think, in some ways of like, no, this guy's going to earn his kind of thing. He's going to take his licks. It's that approach that sometimes we have to kind of like retune ourselves to, I think. Because sometimes it makes obvious sense for the new guy to win, and it's like, that's just never happening there. Like, to them, that is the opposite. So I think this was a case of that, and I think, in fear of doing Jeremy's transition for him, I think Tanahashi versus my new favorite wrestler, the great Okan, was also a case of that, right? I don't know.
I mean, everybody thought, we'll just get into it, everyone thought Okan was going to win. It's like, all right, you've got a new guy.
I did not, actually. I may be the only one in this case. I actually thought Tanahashi was going to win.
Oh, Carlos is smarter than us. That's why. I mean, I definitely thought Okan was going to win because, like Joseph said, like the new guy kind of just wins it. You tell the story of, oh, Tanahashi, does he have it? And all this kind of stuff. And when Tanahashi won, look, I was thrilled. I love Hiroshi Tanahashi. But it did seem like they were going with Okan and they went with Tanahashi. I thought the match was great because Tanahashi in these matches, no matter what, it's such an easy story to tell with him. Broken down Tanahashi, old gunslinger. Does he still have it? Like, he's been wrestling this style for like 5 years, maybe even more. And as he gets older, it's just easier and easier to tell because you can tell he's lost that step and everything. So I thought it was another masterful Tokyo Dome performance by Hiroshi Tanahashi. Carlos, as a man who actually knew Tanahashi was going to win, what do you think?
Overall, I thought that this match was an excellent showcase of great Okan, which I thought that was the whole purpose of the match. I think this was the match where wins and losses probably mattered the least when it comes to looking at both shows and the Great Okan, because Great Okan is coming on, is coming back to New Japan after Excursion. And I may have a slight disagreement on with you, Joseph, about the whole, about Will Ospreay and Great Okan kind of being the new guys, because at the very least, Will Ospreay has been a guy who has sort of been established, although more so as a junior heavyweight, who's had tremendous matches at heavyweight, so it is a lot more believable to have him beat a guy like Okada. But in the case of Great Okan, people are still trying to figure out what his whole deal is about. I mean, for God's sake, they changed it. They made a slight alteration to his name, like, almost immediately after his debut. First, he was the Great Okan. Now he's the Great Okan. I get why did the name change, and it makes sense. And I actually think it's kind of interesting that it's an homage to Genghis Khan, which I thought that was it fits in well with the Empire branding. But I think overall this was more of a match to really establish Great Okan as a guy who can go with some of the best in New Japan and be a guy that will serve as someone who will be the perfect foil to a guy that part of a larger story going up against the Empire, whether it be against Jeff Cobb or against Will Ospreay. And overall, it was a tremendous showing of a guy who is still, to a lot of people, maybe is still a little bit unfamiliar, who maybe didn't follow him during his days as a young lion.
It's interesting. I just quickly to say, you're 100% correct. I just meant like on that stage. You know what I mean? Like they like right. to protect those kind of. You're right. I am so deeply in love with Hiroshi Tanahashi that I legitimately, it took me like 10 minutes of this match to realize who he was wrestling, because I just watched to me, this was a Hiroshi Tanahashi match. This whole match to me was about him. And that tells you where I'm at with that guy. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm glad Carlos is here to tell you the truth. As for the Great Okan, just do this quickly. I think the presentation is super wacky, but kind of fun. I like that his style actually is different and has its own like quirks from his roots. I mean, that's super cool. I thought he was good here. But to me, this was a match that was completely rooted in the story that Jeremy kind of hinted at and mentioned earlier of like Tanahashi fighting those demons of Father Time, right? And like you had these nice little, you know, the skin the cat spot that Sean did in the Rumble, and like that's a Tanahashi spot, right? And like the first time when he got knocked off, he did that the slowest I've ever seen. It was tremendous. And then later in the match, he did it as he once did, and it's like those little touches that if you've watched enough of these matches actually make you feel something. That's a powerful thing. There was another one late in the match where Great Okan put a submission on. And like, I don't think the commentary team quite nailed this, but like, to me, that was 100% a flashback to when he submitted 1 year ago at the Tokyo Dome, which was a big moment for that character, right? When Jericho forced him to submit. And like things like that, that are just someone that's actually invested in him made this match such a hit. I'm not saying it's a classic by any means. It's just such a smart match. The Great Okan was very much a solid foil. I don't want to dismiss what he did, but to me, man, this match was just all about the ace of the universe, one of a kind, Jeremy. As we found out, he's titled just a beautiful man, Hiroshi Tanahashi, a god. Amazing.
A wholesome... Go ahead, Carlos.
And to sort of go on a little bit more about Great Okan is that when you especially read some of the translated interviews that he does with New Japan, it's really not so much about him like, I'm going to win this match so-and-so, like that's my objective. No, my objective is to hurt people. And that's what I wanted to do with Tanahashi, and that's what he wanted to do with a lot of people. And to the greater point, I mean, Tanahashi has been going through that, you know, is Father Time going to be catching up to him? They've been kind of sort of doing that for the last couple of years because, I mean, his body, I mean, he looks phenomenal, but at the same time, he's also battling injuries left and right. And, I mean, he physically, dude's a goddamn Greek god in that sense, like chiseled out of marble. But there were times where you kind of started, where you constantly kept asking yourself, is this really now finally the time where Tanahashi is sort of over the hill? Maybe.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
We're transitioning into like the gatekeeper type of role. And you sort of kind of saw that with the during the G1, where he didn't exactly have the best win-loss record. He actually had a fairly poor showing.
When he did the reveal and took off his little jacket, my God, just tank dropping. Yeah, that was over.
I also liked that he did the, like, you know, the steel chair spot where he was like, should I use the chair? Just threw it away and won anyway. And Kevin Kelly was like, he did not embrace the dark side. I was like, man, I love this guy. Bro, I had honest, this is the truth, okay? I am terrified of the day that this man retires. Like, it will be the saddest shit for me. He's just, what he represents is so much bigger than all the great performances to me. Like, he's a symbol, right? Like, he, it's just fun seeing him in these fights. Like, I need to make a point of seeing that, because even here, in a match that really was like, it wasn't like anyone's headlines after this show or before it, but he's just great to see him. He's a master, right? He's a genius.
Yeah, him, I mean, this is a showcase of why he's an all-time great. Tanahashi is one of the greatest of all time, without a doubt.
And doing air hugs on the way back, just such a wholesome, wholesome man. I love Hiroshi Tanahashi. Let me catch us on some super chats here. Anakin says, was it nice to watch an incredible show for once? Anakin, I watch MLW every single week. It's 1 hour in and out. That is an incredible show. All right, that's an incredible show. Evan Wright says Okada versus Ospreay, Ibushi versus Jay White, Shingo versus Cobb are going to be contenders for match of the year in December. I have a feeling incredible matches to me. Yes, I was higher on Ibushi and Naito than Ibushi and White, and I think my co-hosts were as well. Shingo and Cobb were about to get to. So Shingo, Jeff Cobb, never open weight title. Like, these two men just beat the shit out of each other, tossed each other around, is punched each other in the face, forearmed each other in the chest. This match ruled. Absolutely ruled. I cannot say. This is my favorite match across both nights. And I love both of these men. And they worked it almost like a junior style with the way they were tossing each other around. It was mentioned earlier in a super chat. Jeff Cobb's moonsault, power slam moonsault. I don't know how you do something like that, but the man did it and it looked beautiful. Absolutely, absolutely love this match. Carlos?
I would like to apologize because throughout the duration of the Shingo Takagi talk, I will say nothing but the absolute, you know, nicest things I can say about Shingo Takagi without, and probably at the danger of being called a dirty mark. Because I think Shingo Takagi is, in my opinion, I thought he was the best wrestler of 2020. And this match kind of exemplified why. Shingo Takagi is a guy, as Jerry mentioned, he is a guy that will beat the shit out of you. But the matches that he does, that he has pulled out, day after day, show after show, has been absolutely stellar. Like, I don't think there's been a wrestler pre-pandemic and during the pandemic in 2020 that has had better consistent matches across the board for a variety of different styles than Shingo Takagi. He is a guy who, I will admit, at first when he came into New Japan a couple of years ago, He was a guy that I was worried. I was like, all right, how are they gonna treat him? He's the new signing, but he came from Dragon Gate. And then they strapped the rockets on him, but they protected him very, very well. And I thought that this was a match where I actually kind of thought maybe he'll eat the pin just to kind of put the Empire over. But I'm personally glad that Shingo Takagi is still the Never Open Weight Championship, because you can do so many different styles of matches with Shingo, and all of them would be great. You can have a hard-hitting match like he did against Jeff Cobb, against Minoru Suzuki last year, when like all of their matches last year were fantastic. Against Sho during the New Japan Cup USA was also fantastic. Not New Japan Cup USA, just the regular New Japan Cup, but this match was fantastic. And Jeff Cobb, to his credit, he was about as good a dance partner for Shingo as anyone could ask, because he's literally just another Shingo, where he's a phenomenal wrestler, criminally underrated athletic ability for someone his size. Like, you almost sound like from the very start of the match where Shingo was running the ropes and Jeff Cobb just jumps over him and then pulls off this like beautiful drop kick. That's like, it was like an Okada style drop kick almost. And both of these guys did an absolutely stellar match. I agree. This was my favorite match of the show, to be honest with you.
Yes. Co-signed or trio signed here. I think the reason Jeremy and I love this so much is because
it was short.
Two guys that wasn't like, so like Jeremy watched a lot more than me before this, but we wasn't like so, like completely rooted in the results some of these matches. Physically, this was the most kind of like wow match, right? As far as mix of everything they did. Sometimes on this show, I'll say the phrase about like a guy is better in fault than in execution. And through the years, I've thought that of Cobb, where it's like, he's real good, and I've always kind of been waiting for him to be great. Like, because to me, his skill set should be allowing him to do more. He, in this particular match, on this particular night, he was the wrestler that he would hope and he's aspire to be every night, right? Like, this was the quintessential what Jeff Cobb can be, and that's not a criticism of his usual work. That's me just saying, that's how great this was, this combination of him and Shingo. It's one of those matches that's unique in that it's very difficult to explain why it's great. But if you watch it, you'll need about a minute to figure out why it's so great. And the beautiful thing about it was, while they're doing like, it's, you know, for much of it, they're hitting similar beats here, right? Like, you know, they're just, as you said, Jeremy, as you aptly said, they're beating the shit out of each other, okay? But the way that it still accelerated and escalated as it went on, and at the end there, it's like, you're legit covering your eyes at some of these shots. Some of the clotheslines down the stretch were just like, it was extraordinary. It was a great match. It was my favorite of these two shows too. Great stuff.
And one particular clothesline that I remember was where I think it was Shingo who clotheslined Jeff Cobb, and Cobb did like, you know, a lot of wrestlers nowadays, they oversell the clothesline and they do like a really weird flip and they just end up landing on a weird angle. This was a clothesline where Cobb flipped, but it was in a way that actually sold the clothesline, the lariat, as this like really, really devastating thing. And I can imagine being clotheslined by Shingo Takagi is just one of the worst things ever.
The Made in Japan Shingo hit, like, it's a cool looking move already, but to do it to somebody as big as Jeff Cobb, it looked devastating and at the same time just like awe-inspiring. Shingo, look, Shingo's great. I absolutely love this match, and I'm glad. Like, usually every single title changes hands at Wrestle Kingdom. I'm glad that Shingo won. I thought Cobb was going to win because Empire went 0-2 on night one. It seemed like, all right, you got to establish this group a little bit. I think Empire is going to do something like kind of big at New Year Dash, mm-hmm. to like really establish them for this upcoming year. But they can do a lot with the Never Open Weight title because it is open weight. You can have the juniors come in there and have great matches. Like Carlos says, like, you can do Shingo and Sho. Give them 20 minutes. Give me a 20-minute Shingo and Sho match, and I'll be good. I'll definitely be good.
Shingo against anyone. I'm throwing my name in the hat, Jeremy. Bring me in. I think he can get a freestyle match, Jeremy. He's the most, you know, we always talk that
can phrase. Can you take those strikes, though, Joseph?
Listen, brother, I've seen some shit. Okay? I'm old school. No, I can't.
I mean, you wrestled Flair, so...
True. Good point. Very good point. The chops are different to what Shingo's trying.
Yeah.
You know, like, we always talk sports, and it's like, is Shingo the most, like, plug-and-play wrestler of all time? Like, anywhere you want to put that guy, dude, if he's going to wrestle matches, he's probably going to rule. Like, any promotion in the world, I can figure out 10 matches I'd like to see Shingo have. He's that guy.
He got a great match out of Yujiro Takahashi. Like, that alone should explain to you how great Shingo is. And I like Yujiro, but it's not easy getting a great match out of Yujiro Takahashi nowadays. And Shingo absolutely did that.
Rob Wilkins sends a super chat, says, congrats on your 20-year contract, Joseph. Embiid still sucks. I mean, the Sixers are good, so this is not the time to say that Embiid
sucks. Neither of those things are true. I have not agreed to a 20-year contract, and Joel Embiid does not suck. Both things are false. There you go.
Rob, everyone follow Rob Wilkins at Rob Wilkins. He did great job on the New Japan coverage the past couple of nights. So just excellent job by Rob Wilkins, a very good man. Evan Wright says, inject Shingo versus Brody King into my veins.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Please.
Anything, Joseph, you're not a fan of the Brody King?
Seven-star classic. Oh, I've got fired up. I also want some Shane Taylor. Give me some Shane Taylor.
Oh,
I
want to
see Shane Taylor throwing that big right hand and Shingo just like shaking it off. I need this. I need this. Very good idea. Yes.
In a non-pandemic world, you can do so many great matches with so many guys from the ROH roster with Shingo. It's a damn shame we're not going to get a lot of those matches because of the nature of the world right now.
IWGP Junior Heavyweight Stuff. Night one. Takahashi defeats El Phantasmo to move on to night two to challenge Taiji Ishimori. Takahashi wins on night two. Hiromu's always been a guy that I've like really enjoyed because he's just an absolute madman. And I mean, I'm cool with that. If this guy wants to run 50 feet down the ramp and then just basically take a neck bump on the sloped part of the ramp, like, more power to the man. Just an absolute madman is what Hiromu Takahashi is. I fall in love with this guy every time I see him wrestle, like, more in love with him because just the shit he's willing to do, much like Ibushi. Anybody who's just going to go out there and, like, try to kill themselves for the entertainment and, like, laugh and smile about it, I love it. That's my kind of wrestling right there. That's why I love the Bray Wyatt. He's just out there for our entertainment, everybody.
Hey, in all seriousness, though, I don't throw a flag on anything as far as danger and stuff. Throwing a big flag on that ramp bump, which was... And the worst thing about that spot was it didn't even look good because it looked like they completely, like, you know, just lost their way. And Kevin Kelly said... The lights were up in a way that he couldn't actually see Ishimori. And I was like, that is the fun. That's actually made it worthwhile that that's the reason. But your idea that the character Hiromu Takahashi is like, I cannot see the man I'm running at. I'll run as quick as I can. That's glorious.
Run as fast as I can down this ramp. Hope he's there when I do my jump and then just go for it. Hiromu is awesome. And like, I've always noticed the screaming and stuff with him. I feel like it just gets louder and louder each time. And maybe it's ever since the evil stuff where he just let out that loud scream after the evil turn. This dude is just fantastic. Hiromu Takahashi is now in my top five as well, along with Kota Ibushi. Everybody's just moving up. Carlos, what do you think of Takahashi's both nights?
I mean, need I say anything more other than it was your typical Hiromu Takahashi matches in the sense that these were two of the best matches you're going to see all year long. And I mean, and I love the little story that they had right before this match between El Phantasmo and Hiromu in the sense where Hiromu, and we were talking about, you know, honorable fighting baby faces, and you don't get to see that from Hiromu as much as some other guys, but I love his sense of, okay, I won Best of the Super Juniors, but there's another guy who also won a junior heavyweight tournament literally 4,000-6,000 miles from where I won it. And I want to face him before I get to face Taiji Ishimori. And even though I don't fully agree with Taiji Ishimori winning the Super J Cup again, I knew right from the get-go these two were going to put on a stellar match. I thought that this was you know, I thought this was, aside from the Kota Ibushi show, I thought this was the Hiromu Takahashi show, where it was, you know, Takahashi had his thing with LIJ and with Evil throughout the summer, lost the titles to Taiji Ishimori and Summer and Jingu, and then it was just Hiromu just sort of reasserting himself as the top junior heavyweight in the world. And I mean, Taiji Ishimori and El Fantasma, two great wrestlers, and you know, it's almost impossible to have a bad match or even a good match with Hiromu Takahashi if you're also a good wrestler. He only knows how to go at one speed, which is give us the absolute best match possible. And the match against Ishimori and El Fantasma probably going to end up being top 20 matches this year when it's all said and done.
I wasn't as high on night one as you was, Carlos. And I don't think you're alone. It seems to have been divisive. I'm not sure where I'm at on El Fantasma. So that's probably a me thing, right? Like, I think it was fine. It didn't jump off the screen for me.
It wasn't a super sexy pick, but I can understand why you may have to go with the safe choice with El Fantasma winning the tournament again and facing Hiromu, because it's kind of hard to really get to do everything that you want in a pandemic world.
It worked as far as what they were trying, because I agree with what your point was, which is like, in, you know, within all of this craziness that is Hiromu Takahashi, it really was a pretty straightforward, like, heroic tale, right? Of this guy really truly putting a stamp on where he is in this promotion, in this division. And to do that, you need the first match against the complete dick that is, like, it worked. I just didn't love that particular match. But the second match with Ishimori, the segment late on, and this is the one that comes to mind for me, and there's a bunch, I understand, especially a lot of stuff that looks cool, where he was just fighting through the forearms. And Ishimori went through the gears on these forearms. Like, initially it was like, okay, he's throwing some good forearms. He started nailing it. And they did a great job. Rocky Romero nailed it with his commentary. Was like, his exact quote was, I think, something like, Hiromu has to stay on his feet to avoid referee stopping this match. And he timed that perfectly, because Hiromu legit looked like he was barely able to stand up. And he kept coming and getting back. And again, it's like, even with all the great stuff these guys can do now, especially Hiromu, he's done some amazing stuff physically. There still needs to be a core emotion to these matches, right? And he is the guy who I think most consistently hits that. As far as guys that, you know, knew he's disrespectful to him, but like, you know, we're talking about Tanahashi. Jeremy and I are in love with Tanahashi from way back. It's different. It's a very different kind of thing. Takahashi, like, he always gets
Hey, I love Tanahashi too.
Right, there you go. Like, it's way back. It's rooted in way back when. But I can come into Hiromu matches having no clue what the angle is on the narrative. He'll get me by the end of the match, because he performs with such vigor and such sort of like passion. You just fall in love with the guy. I'm totally with what both of you said. It's just like that particular visual stood out to me. And it was just a nice, simple, and I guess there are comparisons there with the Ibushi story, but the way that they executed in that second match I thought was great. So another kind of great, like, moment in the timeline for Takahashi of, like, he could really be a game changer in junior heavyweight history, right? And I think they're starting to tell that story, it seems to me. So that's something to be excited about, I think. That, for me, it is anyway, definitely.
Hiromu selling the hand. I mean, they told the story that in the first night his hand was broken. The second night, like, I thought he was gonna tap to Ishimori when he had him in whatever the move was. I definitely thought, Joseph knows I'm a move guy. The fact that I can't think of a move right now.
Yes lock, brother. They were calling it the yes lock.
Yes lock? Oh, were they calling it? Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, my brain is fried. All right. I thought he was gonna tap on that, especially when Ishimori, like, rolled him over and everything. I thought that was it.
With the one where, like, he straightened the arm up, right?
Yeah, that's why I didn't think it was like a yes lock, because
he did that initially and then he went to that. I don't know what that's called. I'm sorry, Jeremy.
Right. but I thought he was gonna tap. He fought out of it. You're right that Hiromu can, like, draw you in even if you don't know the story coming into it. I think part of that's just all his yelling. Top five screamer. Just,
it's a big part of wrestling, man.
It is. Yeah.
I like guys that make noises.
It's not only the screaming, but, like, just some of his cells, the way he looks like he's just out on his feet. It's not incredible, incredible job selling. I love Hiromu. Cannot wait to see how this run goes. A lot of good matches, like not good, like a lot of great potential matches out there if they can get some guys over to Japan. I know our buddy Andrew Thompson mentioned like a Lia Rush match. There's like an ACH potential match. And really anybody in the Super J Cup that took place in America, you do any of those matches, like Hiromu's going to have a good match against pretty much everybody. We're going to get Sho and Hiromu at one point, probably an extended thing. That's going to be great. I'm looking forward to this run for Hiromu. Evan Wright says, Kevin Kelly is the best commentator in wrestling. It's hard to disagree.
I agree.
With that. Yeah.
Very, very good.
It's hard to disagree with that. I guess the other.
He had maybe the best, my favorite call of night two, where Gato pulled the referee Red Shoes out of pinning, counting the 1, 2, 3, and chemically just screams out at the top of his lungs, "God damn you, Gato!" I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
He does a good job of like, and I mean this in a, like a really genuine way. So please don't make. I'm not doing this as a slight, but like he doesn't like dominate when I'm watching. I don't like hear him all the time, get irritated, but he adds to it without subtracting. Right, like some guys that add a lot also equally take away by being so kind of like. Loud for the term. Kevin avoids that. He's a pro. Respect to Kevin Kelly.
The other kind of big match from both nights, Sonata defeating Evil. Look, I got killed on Twitter for not being an Evil fan. I don't have a use for Evil. Okay. I think he's good as like kind of a mid-card sort of heel. I think he's fine there, but as like a top heel, I don't have a use for Evil. All right, if he's going to be the leader of the Bullet Club and they're going to kick Jay White out, I don't know. Bullet Club ain't going to be – it's not really my thing as it is. Definitely going to be my thing if it's a group led by Evil. Carlos, I love Sonata, by the way. Sonata came out at the end of the show as well. And, Luis Padillo says Hiromu against Chris Bay. I'll take that. Sonata came out at the end of the show, challenged Ibushi. It looks like they're going to go with that. I love Sonata. I think they should be pushing this guy as a single star. Especially over Evil. Carlos, what'd you think of this match?
I thought it was a very fitting conclusion to the Evil Sonata storyline that really has been, it's weird. It's a story that maybe could have and should have been the top story throughout the summer as part of the Evil turning on Los Ingobernables de Japón. And it was. But I don't know. There was a part of it that kind of felt like it could have been an even bigger story there. But regardless, I thought this was an adequate finish. I'm glad Sonata won. I think that for a guy that I think they're now finally starting to really push as a major, major single star, they're finally starting to sort of get it with Sonata, because in the past, in a way, it was sort of similar to Kota Ibushi, where they flirted with kind of pulling the trigger on Sonata, where they were almost like they give him a big win against a big name, but they don't follow up too much on it. And he goes back to doing tag stuff with Evil, and then I was fully invested in this Evil Sonata thing because I mean these guys were like not just a tag team, they were one of the most successful tag teams in all of New Japan for years and years. And the split was, I mean, came out of nowhere. I was surprised. You know, I'm glad the Sonata didn't look like a total geek after the split. And I agree with Jeremy. Sonata should be a guy that they should be pushing as one of the best singles guys in New Japan, because I honestly think he is one of the best wrestlers in the heavyweight division.
I don't know.
Not a Sonata guy?
To be honest, I just think, you know, we just had that, what we said about Hiromu, about like the way he's able to emote. I know that's what Sonata's thing is he's like cold, right? He's cool and collected and it's like...
Cold stone.
I've never found a way to care about him in any way, shape or form. However, this was a match between two men I don't care about at all, but I thought it was a very good match between two men I don't care at all. I thought they had some tremendous touches as far as their particular story. And if you were into what they had going in, I would say this really hit what you were looking for. I thought they worked really hard and did a good job. My gripes of Evil stuff, like, is just what it is, and I can get around that. Dick Togo took the best tables bump in the history of professional wrestling in this match, in which he actually did like a Tom and Jerry style leap into a table, which exploded immediately.
onto the table. Like, even a full-on elbow drop.
It felt like the real proper comeuppance for Dick Togo after he had his handprint on the G1 and with Evil, like, almost to the point where it was just detrimental to the whole overall point, but yes.
So we were doing, sorry, my bad, Jeremy. One last thing. When we were doing the Twitch gimmick on Sunday, which again, weeks ago, our friend Tank, he mentioned in the chat, he was like, among the Japanese wrestling audience that's on social, they love this story and these characters. And I watched it through that lens, and I think they did a really nice job of staying true to these characters. I like the idea of Sanada not kind of giving in to the rage, which I think Kevin Kelly did a great job with that. I thought he did a really good job. It wasn't my thing, but I thought they had a good match.
Here's the thing. I did like this match, too. And I could imagine if you were into this story, you probably thought this was a great match. Like Joseph said, I'm not in on Evil. And I love Sanada, but I'm not in on Evil. And it's just tough for me to get in on his stuff. When I tweeted the stuff about, like, yeah, I love Sanada, shame is wrestling Evil, then I just played into the bit that I don't like Evil. It was a lot of people just being like, you suck. And it was a lot of the, like, core New Japan, like, Japanese fans who were like, you just don't get it. And, like, I probably don't. I probably don't. It's just not for me. Dunk on me all you want. I don't care. It's just not for me. DeFelice sends a super chat, says the Evil Sanada matches all. No, we like the match. No, the match was good.
Evil's too far. There's nothing on these shows. The Rumble was, even the Rumble wasn't, I nearly said it. You know what was amazing about the Rumble? It had so many good professional wrestlers, and it still was so desperate to be the Rumble. It was like, we're not having a good match. We're going to do the Rumble. There was no energy. Oh, it ruled.
No, 35 minutes for that. I guess Sean preferred playing Tetris over Evil and Sanada. Like, it was a long night for it was a long night for all of us. But point God for life. Thank you. Buy the shirt. Everyone go to Fightful Shop, whatever the website is. Buy a shirt. Drew Nicholas has the most comfortable shirt he has. Go get the most comfortable shirt you could ever imagine.
Wow.
Makes your nips hard. Makes your nips hard, makes the panties drop. Those are real reviews on the point.
By the way, speaking of that, if you dunked on my friend Jeremy Lambert's tweet about NBA Twitter and Hiroshi Tanahashi, we are not friends, okay? That's the best tweet anyone's ever sent. We're not friends.
Numbers. I got like over 1,000 likes. I was so proud of that tweet. The dunk was like, well, no one would know who this guy is. Look, I don't give a shit. This is a great chance. Yeah. Oh, cared. Tanahashi is a god. All right. Tag title stuff. Guerrillas of Destiny won the tag titles. They finally win at Wrestle Kingdom. And then Suzuki-Goon retained the junior tag titles. Any thoughts on either of these tag matches?
I like them both. Okay. Sorry, you go, Carlos. I apologize. Carlos, you go.
They were fine matches. They were good matches, but I will be honest. Those were the two matches I was maybe invested in the least, because it's been a very, very, and it's not really necessarily the fault of the wrestlers, because I think all of them are very talented, but especially with the junior heavyweight tag titles, it's been a very, very awkward time for those titles, because Sho and Yo were the class of that division, and then Yo got injured, and, you know, he's going to be out for quite a while, and it was sort of like a little scramble just to kind of get everything, just to get a new champion in a depleted junior heavyweight division, just when you're also about to do a best of the super juniors, and I don't want to say like it was like literally sewn together, but it's not a division that's particularly given a lot of focus. I thought overall it was fine. I thought this was a good showcase of Master Wato, who I still can't get over the name Master Wato. I still can't get over it, but I do think he is a very, very good wrestler, and I think he has a very unique look, but it will take me again some getting used to Master Wato, but I think he has potential. Heavyweight tag team titles. I mean, it was a good match. It was a very good match. Guerrillas of Destiny, like was shown, Yo, Guerrillas of Destiny are the class of the heavyweight tag team division. And I was fine with the change. Tai Chi has really, really grown on me throughout this tag title reign. He has really emerged as a real bona fide star in my eyes. And I'm fine if the title change means that Taichi would also go on to do some single stuff, because I don't think he is a guy that you can just simply relegate him to tag matches. He can work as a singles guy in certain situations, and I think he has really improved, especially during this pandemic.
I really was surprised how much I enjoyed the heavyweight tag title match. I thought they did a really good job of producing a match that was true to both teams and what they stand for, without having no structural. It had some like kind of clunky stuff early, where initially they kind of set up to have Tamura as like facing peril, and I was very scared, concerned. Jeremy was the word, but when they settled in on like, okay, we're going to build to a Zack Sabre Jr. hot tag, that worked really well, I thought. And I thought Grizz Destiny was super inspired and motivated here. The finishing stretch was exciting. The finish itself was about what I'm used to expecting from these matches, which is, you know, it's not a whole lot to it. The junior tag, I have to say, that I haven't seen a lot of it, but every time I see El Desperado and Kanemaru, I love the way they structure their matches. I love the way they have a true control segment in there where they don't just like stall and waste time. It's like, it's intense and it's on point. So that, I enjoyed both matches, and I thought they were both kind of good additions to each night. The issue is, and it goes to what Carlos said about investment, and it's like, it is a shame that every year when you tune into Wrestle Kingdom, it's like, oh, the tag titles are doing what this year? Like, it would be nice if it was different, right? But as for what they were, I thought they were good matches.
Evan Wright says, get the F over here. It's the Tokyo Dome. I love Zack Sabre Jr. He's
that line was fantastic. I was howling at that. And also, to your point, it's like, it also doesn't help that the World Tag League, which I think is a criminally underrated tournament, is at the very end of the year, right when people are already thinking about Wrestle Kingdom, and then they're just waiting like, all right, let's just wait until World Tag League's done so we can then officially announce the full card for Wrestle Kingdom. And like, it I don't say guys are on cruise control, but it's like, well, let's just try to go for that tournament to get to Wrestle Kingdom, so it does get a little bit, it's not as exciting a time in late and mid to late December when we're just now figuring out who are the number one contenders to the tag titles.
I've said it many times, they just need to combine the divisions. I don't get the point of having two separate divisions. They can barely book one, combine it, streamline it, make it much easier. The other stuff on these shows, Kenta defeated Kojima. I thought this match was great. Moxley, I guess Kenta's going to America and he's going to fight Moxley in the LA Dojo. And I'm glad Kenta is finally getting that match after like 8 months or whatever of holding this briefcase. Good on him for finally getting it. He had to defend it a lot. So I thought this match was really good. And the Fire Pro match had me more fired up for this match. Joseph?
It was. And what a nice sort of just a cool little story of a guy who had a shot. You know, they did a little Rocky Balboa a bit too, I think, on commentary. Like, a guy who had a shot to kind of roll back the years, giving it everything against a complete dick who happens to have a briefcase. And, like, in flashes, man, Kenta is still that dude. Like, when he'll explode in a strike exchange, it's like, oh, that's familiar to me. I thought they both really worked hard and had a good match. Kojima's sell of the go-to-sleep was awesome, by the way. Like, it was so sad and kind of, you know, the old shit, he's gone, like, it's over. But it wasn't like a classic by any means, but it's just a really strong match in the middle of a show that, where a lot of stuff's trying to be grand and kind of spectacular, this just was exactly what was needed, I thought, and give a little bit of variety. I really liked it.
Carlos?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I mean, Satoshi Kojima did the absolute best he could in a situation where he was kind of brought in at the last second after the whole thing with Juice Robinson. And I like the little story they got with Kenta, where he is literally just trying to be like, hey, when the hell is Moxley going to come here? I'm literally defending the title, my briefcase more times than he's ever defended his title. So, like, what am I still, like, the briefcase holder? I should be the champion. So I like what they're doing with Kenta. I think he's finally hit his stride in New Japan after he's had a little bit of a weird adjustment period, getting out of the WWE style and acclimating into the New Japan style. I think he's finally coming into his own based on what I've seen from in the last 8 months.
Toru Yano is king of pro wrestling, as it should be.
Yes.
That's it.
he should be king of pro wrestling after he won the rant, after he was one of the four winners without ever getting into the ring.
Bro, Ghetto, the four men that he chose to be in that match almost was worth like erasing all good that was done in these two. Do you calm down, man? I know your reputation is strong, but like, let's not get crazy here, okay? Someone should have had a camera on me when was it Ishii and Suzuki went at the same time?
Yeah,
right. I was like, are we even going to do this show? It's the end. I'm done. No, I had a great time with this. This was fun.
Overall thoughts on both nights of Wrestle Kingdom. Carlos?
Very, very good shows, especially given the nature of the pandemic, what they've had to go through for the last 6 months. I thought both were excellent shows. I would highly give it a watch to anyone who hasn't seen them.
Joseph?
Absolutely, same thing. I think they were both great. I think, considering the circumstances, they did a great job of still capturing that grand feel, both in-ring and in terms of presentation. Whether or not they have me hooked, I actually think tomorrow will decide a lot of that in a weird way, you know, like with the directions that we leave this with. As far as the in-ring, man, like, whatever your gripes are with this or that, you know, it still is kind of premier in terms of what they can produce in there. Again, the style is what it is in terms of length, so if that's not for you, I get it. But in terms of quality and execution and skill, it's hard to kind of put anyone at any promotion above this. This crew is amazing. It consistently churns out quality. So I had a great time with it.
And as it was in the night, and they produced it in such a way where you can sort of get caught up on what happened on night one, so it doesn't feel like you have to go through a 3.5-hour show just to go watch this, the second 3.5-hour show.
Carlos, thank you for joining us. Where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Carlos Toro Media, where I'm still doing the gimmick of posting wrestling ratings, even though I'm no longer with Fightful. So I'm mainly just doing boxing right now. I got a YouTube channel where I also do plenty of boxing content, which is also Carlos Toro Media. And this past weekend, I did a little like end of 2020 spring where I played Punch Out and I sucked just horribly. I did not know how to beat Don Flamenco, which is really an indictment on me as someone who works in boxing media.
Joseph, anything to plug?
You already know. I'll be on the Hiroshi Tanahashi Stan accounts for the next few years. Yeah, everyone knows, right? It is what it is, the Twitter and all that good stuff. Have fun. Keep grinning.
We'll be back on Thursday. We're going to do the First Take show. Andrew Thompson is going to be with us. Yeah, Joseph, we got to, like, this week ain't over. I told you. I thought it was Wednesday at 9:00 this morning. Nope, it was only Tuesday. Still a long, long week ahead. Carlos, again, thank you, buddy. It was good to do a show with you after you've carried me for news for so long. You've allowed me to do a lot more than I ever could imagine. And I didn't get a chance to say that to you on the Christmas show because I did a bit where I did talk, but thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Well, I mean, I should say the same to you. I mean, Jeremy, you're the point guy for a reason. And thank you so much for letting me be on the show and just sort of hijack it, just talking about New Japan for literally 75 minutes. And I've so very much enjoyed it. And as I mentioned back on the Christmas stream, I will always be a friend of Fightful and I will always be there for you guys no matter what.
1:15 exactly, bitches, just as I called it. We'll talk to everybody on Thursday.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.